We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to a Wednesday edition of the RotoWire NBA podcast. Nick Whalen here, as always, with Alex Marutha. We are sponsored by WinBet. Check out winbet.com, the presenting sponsor of all RotoWire fantasy podcasts this season. Check out winbet.com for all of your sports wagering needs. Alex, we have some news to get to at the top. We're going to play another round of Who Would You Rather Draft a little later on. But we have some Ben Simmons news, some Zion Williamson news, some Minnesota Timberwolves news. I would posit right away that none of this is exactly positive for any of the players or organizations involved.
This is like one of the more negative news days I can remember for a while, especially like in the middle of this. Like, this is usually the point in the season where like everyone's hopes are really high. You get some really strong, like, positive news. You know, player X has put on 20 pounds of pure muscle, and the opposite is happening right now, where it's just there are three franchises that are kind of borderline, you know, dealing with some dysfunction.
The Sixers are in the best position of those three. Even if they end up having to take like 75 cents on the dollar for Ben Simmons, which so far they have basically been trying to get like $1.50 on the dollar for Simmons, if that makes sense. Like, they've tried to go the other way. All indications are that they will not be accepting anything less than what they view as fair value, or maybe even like better value, but eventually that's probably going to wear down. But let's start with Ben Simmons. I wouldn't exactly say this was breaking news, and this came out on Tuesday, but Simmons camp at this point is essentially prepared to enter a full-on holdout if he is not traded before training camp, and training camp opens in less than a week. So at this point, the expectation is that Ben Simmons will not be in Philly. There's been mixed messaging from the Sixers, mixed messaging from Joel Embiid, Doc Rivers. They've kind of tried to smooth things over, or at least walk back some of the comments that they made back in May and June, you know, during the NBA playoffs, when all this kind of really started to become a dumpster fire. But at this point, I think Simmons is resigned to the fact that he'll be playing somewhere else. And no matter what Rivers or Embiid or the front office or presidents, whoever, no matter what anybody says, I just don't think that they can bring Simmons back at this point. And I tweeted this earlier this week, like, it's got to the point that whenever Simmons comes back to Philly in another uniform, and maybe he'll do the Kyrie and just sit out every game against his former team, whenever that happens, it's setting up to be an all-time booing scenario. I don't know if it'll reach LeBron back in Cleveland in 2010, but I mean, Philly fans have completely turned on Simmons at this point.
Yeah, you're right. It's not going to be like LeBron. However, the city of Philly is a more impassioned fan base than Cleveland. It's just that obviously, exactly, LeBron is a better player. So it could end up, you know, the two factors could end up being relatively close with the outcome. I'm with you. I think his first game back would be, It's interesting to go back. I watched that LeBron return. I watched it at some point last year, and it was kind of like, if people who haven't seen it or haven't seen it in a while should go on YouTube and watch that. It was just complete chaos. Pretty sure it was like tons of extra security in the building. No. It could be like that for Simmons. But yeah, you're right. It's just, you know, his trade value is so hard to evaluate because, you know, we're talking about, like, do you take 75 cents on the dollar for him? Is Morey trying to get $1.50 for him? It's hard to, I think, evaluate what Simmons' true value actually is. You know, what's his true value in a situation that's perfectly set up for him? And so, you know, is his value right now inherently less than the dollar that it should be? That's a whole different discussion. But yeah, the holdout is tough. You know, Philly has the personnel to maybe, you know, I mean, they should at least be over 500 with just Embiid there. Yeah. But you want to avoid that as much as possible.
Well, I think there's somewhat of an unknown, too, with if you go into the season without Ben Simmons, and at this point, you know, if he's holding out, you haven't traded for him and gotten anything back to replace him in some way, that, you know, your defense could potentially fall off a cliff. Like, you still have an elite defensive center, of course, in Embiid, but, you know, one of the things that makes Simmons so valuable, or at least made him so valuable before all of this started, was, I mean, he was, for the most part, pretty healthy. You know, despite missing, you know, his entire true rookie year, he played 81 games the next season, 79, then 57 and 58 in abbreviated, you know, COVID seasons. You know, we haven't really seen the Sixers have to play a long stretch without him. And I think there is a, you know, for as negatively as things turned out this past season, I don't think anybody is arguing that the Sixers, like, just removing Ben Simmons from the team, they're probably not as good. They're certainly not better without him. Now, they could be better if they trade for him and bring in, you know, CJ McCollum or De'Aaron Fox or whatever name you want to throw out. Like, it's possible that you could put a better fit around Embiid, but simply removing him from the situation doesn't make Philly a better team. So there is a sense of urgency there. You know, they can, like you said, they can still be a safe playoff team without him, but they don't want to go the entire year not trading Ben Simmons. Like, that's a, you know, an outcome that's certainly not going to happen. There's reason for both sides to try to get this done, especially if it's true that Simmons will not go back there. And again, whether he says it or not, I just don't. I think the relationship, you know, publicly is just it's to a point where it's irreparable, right? Where it would not be worth the circus of even trying to bring him back. And, you know, it's been a while since we've had a new, like, trade rumor surrounding Simmons. Yeah, everybody knows the situation, but, you know, normally when these situations occur, they tend to work themselves out pretty quickly. You know, think James Harden, where, you know, the Rockets were prepared to go into a standoff, and then a week later he's on the Nets. You know, more often than not, right, these teams cave to the public pressure, and eventually I think Philly's going to have to do that. But there's just so many factors here, including the unique fit of Ben Simmons. You know, there are certain teams that could maybe trade for him, but they look at the rest of their roster and say, well, are we really willing to bend everything to accommodate this guy? I think it's interesting. If you look at, I think it was BetMGM, threw out some odds on where Simmons plays his first regular season game next season. The Timberwolves, unsurprisingly, the favorites at plus 400. You got the Rockets, the Kings, the Spurs, the Warriors, the Raptors, the Trailblazers, the Thunder, the Wizards, and the Cavaliers. Those are the top 10 favorites. The Sixers I don't see on this list, so they just must not be included here. On the surface, I still feel like Minnesota probably makes the most sense just because Minnesota's desperate. You know, they are the type of franchise that would make a move like this. They just fired their GM like an hour ago. There's not a ton of strong leadership in place there. But at the same time, do they have the assets that Philly wants in an Embiid trade? Like, are an Embiid trade, a Simmons trade? Are they interested in Malik Beasley? Are they interested in D'Angelo Russell, assuming Towns and Edwards are off the table?
I think, you know, I don't know. Because if you are Philly and you've decided to trade for Simmons and you're taking the package that everyone's kind of throwing out of, like you mentioned, D'Angelo Russell, Malik Beasley, you know, depending on how you feel about Tobias Harris, then, you know, either D'Angelo Russell or Tobias Harris is your second best player. And I know Embiid's an MVP caliber player, so he can carry a team really far. But kind of in the modern NBA, or at least in the current landscape of the NBA, where you have, you know, the Nets and the Lakers being a super team, and even the Bucks you know, being relatively stacked with, you know, their top three. If you have Embiid and then like D'Angelo Russell as your number two, you do not feel good about that. And you know, Malik, like they would get good depth, right? Like depth matters. Malik Beasley might be underrated. He's a great 3-point shooter. Obviously, all those guys fit on the court together perfectly, but you know, you lose a lot of defense and all that. And like you're saying, it's a tough fit. And if you're Philly, I don't know if you can do that. Like, I just don't think you can come to the fans and be like, yeah, we got D'Angelo Russell and Malik Beasley for mm-hmm. you know, someone who was formerly, and with like pretty good reason, like one of our franchise cornerstones in Ben Simmons.
Right. I think you need another piece. Maybe that's Jaden McDaniels. I mean, maybe you really try and try to get Anthony Edwards out of Minnesota. I don't think they would do that. But right. I mean, if I'm Philly, I would be extremely underwhelmed if the keystone asset that I'm bringing back for Ben Simmons is D'Angelo Russell. I mean, and you talk about the defensive drop off. I mean, that is about as drastic as it gets. You're going from maybe the most versatile and you know, most ferocious, like defensive quote unquote guard in the league to one of the worst, most lackadaisical defenders in the NBA. I think whatever upgrade you're getting in terms of fit on offense would not be worth the dramatic decline in defense. And I mean, D'Angelo Russell also has not been able to stay healthy for the most part right. throughout his career. And you're, you know, Tobias Harris is about as steady as they get, but Embiid, you got to pencil him in for at least 10 to 15 absences, if not more. That's a guy that anytime he hits the floor, you're worried that it's something severe. And this is also a team that doesn't really have a ton of depth all over the court. So, I mean, I think if you end up being resigned to the fact that you can't flip Ben Simmons for a star, I don't hate the idea of trying to get, you know, one keystone piece and then like two or three other guys who are at least rotation players. Because right now, I mean, you take Simmons out of the equation. Is Shake Milton playing 30 minutes a game? Is Tyrese Maxey, you know, playing 30 minutes a game? There's not a ton of depth on this team, and it gets even thinner up front. I don't think you want Andre Drummond doing more than just kind of the Dwight Howard role from last year.
Yeah, exactly. And this is, you know, this is kind of the problem where they, you know, their best player, their star player, Joel Embiid, is 27, which is early prime essentially. Like, and with a history of knee injuries, you know, you kind of have to pull the trigger on like some win now moves. You can't be like accumulating picks and like, you know, taking shots on like young talent. Like, you have to kind of just go for it right now when you have Embiid at this level. And like you mentioned, yeah, if you're not, you know, if Simmons is holding out for as long as he's holding out, yeah, it's just going to be a lot of Shake Milton, Tyrese Maxey. And, you know, the 76ers are just, again, they're not a deep team. You know, they only got so much out of Thybulle last year. Korkmaz is just, he's whatever. Like, they grab, you know, Niang from the Jazz. It's like, it's all lateral stuff that they've been doing. They're just kind of shuffling the bench. So they definitely need like a legit number two guy. And like we keep going over, it's just, that's not easy to find for Ben Simmons at this point, because one other team is like, yeah, we're trading our number one or our number two guy for Ben Simmons. It's just mm-hmm. a lot of other teams are like, well, we have our guy in the building. We know he wants to be here. We think maybe their upsides are comparable. Like, why would we even right. take the chance on this risk? Like, if you're, you know, this isn't a perfect one-to-one example, but if you're the Thunder and you have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, like, there'd be no way you would even consider trading Ben Simmons for him. Because if you're the Thunder, you're like, well, we have SGA, we'd like him. And maybe long-term, SGA could be even potentially better than Ben Simmons. Like, they would never do that. Yeah. And I feel the same way about the Kings and, like, De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah, I never liked the Fox one for the Kings. And the reason I feel like that's still on the table is because it's the Kings. And I could see them doing that. And it would, I think, be kind of disastrous for them. But yeah, it's a good point. I mean, for either of those teams, you know, it's a lateral move at best, right? You know, like, you're not, I don't think if you're Sacramento, you swap out Fox for Simmons and all of a sudden you're a playoff team, and certainly the same for the Thunder. It's just a really, really strange situation. And again, it goes back to the fact that Simmons is a really strange fit, and in the right situation, he could be really good. But, you know, on top of the concerns about the lack of the jump shot, the lack of aggression, you know, confidence issues, all that alone is enough to raise some red flags and trades. But then when you raise the fit problem on top of it, it's kind of easy to see, you know, why his value has deteriorated to the point that it has. So I think this is all moving toward an eventual, probably early season trade. Like you and I have maintained all along that it's going to come out of nowhere one random Tuesday morning. And I still think that's where it's headed, because it's now as public as it can be. All the information is out there. Simmons is fully prepared to wait this out. He's a Clutch Sports guy. None of this is really surprising. And it doesn't really seem like Philly has been able to gain any leverage. If anything, the Sixers have probably lost leverage since the end of the playoffs. So, I mean, at some point, one of the two sides is going to have to cave. And I think, I don't know if this is the right way to phrase it, but like Simmons has already caved as much as he can. Like he's prepared to hold out and he's prepared to leave money on the table. That, you know, now it's kind of, the ball is kind of in the Sixers court at this point. Like Simmons has made his declaration and by all accounts is going to stick by it. Now it's just up to when the Sixers want to accept one of the several offers that are likely on the table, but clearly at this point just aren't all that appealing to Daryl Morey.
Yeah, I think there is still, like, there's got to be something. Like, I'm kind of holding out hope for, like, the Ben Simmons for Bradley Beal trade.
I think the Sixers are, too.
Right. Like, that's the one people have been ignoring, because Bradley Beal keeps being like, I want to stay in Washington. And the Wizards right. are like, we don't really want to give up on Bradley Beal. But I think that's one in theory that makes sense. But I don't know. Part of the issue, too, is that Ben Simmons isn't, like, exactly a super young. He's not, like, a prospect anymore. He's 25.
Right.
You know, like, we're not talking about, like, someone who's – if you're an actual rebuild, you can't really take on – you could take on Ben Simmons, but like that would accelerate you. Like you have to start really trying to make the playoffs at that point. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really impossible to say how it's going to play out. I think Minnesota is rightfully the favorite to land him. I mean, a team like that certainly makes the most sense. One that's like in a rebuild, but also has some pieces and could conceivably convince itself that adding Simmons accelerates that. You know, it takes a team that I think is really trying to take that next step. Not necessarily a team like OKC, that is, you know, totally fine kind of being in this rebuild zone for a while. I want to move on to the Pelicans quickly before we do who would you rather draft. I was going to say it's a bizarre story, but not really. I mean, if you've kind of been following the tea leaves around the Zion situation, nothing that came out of that article on the New Orleans Times Picayune website on Tuesday, on Wednesday, is really all that surprising. Essentially, you know, the gist of it is, David Griffin is in some hot water as the GM of the Pelicans. Zion Williamson has not been extremely communicative with David Griffin or with the organization or with his teammates even. There's some family influence, which dates all the way back to high school with Zion, that's apparently still you know, very much in the picture with him now in the NBA. But man, this situation, I don't want to say like that the Pelicans have like completely mismanaged it. I mean, they certainly have to some degree. But I mean, to potentially be kind of in the same boat as they were with Anthony Davis, and now another generational prospect comes through, you know, several years later, and you're at risk of not even signing him now to a second contract. And that's an idea that's been floated out there for a while now, you know, at least the last 6 months to a year. And man, after reading that article today, and as we move toward this season, like that seems more and more realistic that Zion could be a quote unquote pioneer on that front, as far as not signing the automatic rookie extension that virtually everybody signs.
Yeah, I mean, whenever I hear stories like this, the two things I think about are, you know, what you brought up with the Anthony Davis situation and how the parallels are, it's kind of hard to believe. I mean, it's happening on a much earlier scale, right? It's much more accelerated with Zion than it was with Anthony Davis. There at least was some hope like two seasons in that. Well, Anthony Davis wasn't that great as a rookie, so there wasn't that pressure immediately. And also, like, on, I think it was lottery day. I can't quite remember, but there was that clip where Zion, like, walked over to the Atlanta Hawks, like, podium, I think on lottery day, and was, like, clearly upset that he didn't get drafted by Atlanta. I'm upset that he didn't get drafted by... Can you imagine Trae Young and Zion Williamson?
I think Zion has some connections, you know, with guys around his age and probably would have loved to team up with one of those guys. And... you know, it's hard to blame New Orleans. Like, that's kind of the point I was trying to make, I guess. It's like New Orleans has at least made several efforts to try to improve this team, but they just haven't really come to fruition.
Yeah,
you know, I think losing Drew Holiday in retrospect was probably not worth the package that they got back, even though that's going to bring a ton of draft picks in the future. Like, the way this is going, you know, like when those draft picks come, you know, vest essentially, Zion might not even be on the team anymore. And that was kind of the whole point, was we can continue to grow this team around you over the next decade. And I think Zion, you know, under the table is like, I'm not, like the Magic Johnson meme, like, I'm not going to be here.
Right. Yeah, in hindsight, them trading Drew Holiday is like not, that looks pretty bad now.
It's terrible.
Yeah, because they could have really, like, now they've been stuck with, you know, like, yeah, Lonzo was good. It's like now they have Devontae Graham and Nikhil Alexander Walker as their backcourt. Like, and when they could have had Lonzo and Kira Lewis and Sagaransky, Josh Hart. When they could have had Lonzo, Drew, and then you still have Ingram, you have Zion. Yeah, man. Like, the Steven Adams thing was that made no sense on paper. That's
the worst of them all.
It was a really, there just have been some truly just bizarre moves to come out of that front office. And I know that being a GM is harder than, you know, everyone likes to pretend it's easy, but it's hard to look at this roster and, you know, none of those Bucks draft picks are going to be great. And it's just like, where's the first round victory in the playoffs upside coming from?
Yeah, I mean, the Holiday trade and the Davis trade are yet another example of almost always the team giving up the superstar loses those deals, right? And oftentimes, especially recently with the amount of picks that have been involved in some of these trades, you know, think like the Paul George trade as well. It's kind of tempting to say like, wow, I mean, the amount of assets coming in here, like maybe it is worth it to lose Anthony Davis or lose Paul George or lose Drew Holiday. James Harden, same way. Like it's never, ever worth it. Like if the Pelicans could do it over, they would have Anthony Davis starting alongside Zion Williamson, and it would be like one of the best front courts in the history of basketball. And, you know, I don't want to blame the Pelicans too much because I do think for as short-sighted and just kind of bizarre as some of those moves have been, they're also put in a really tough spot where it's like, all right, you got this guy, but clock's ticking right now. You better be good. And you have to be constantly proving to this guy that that you're worthy of him playing for you. And I don't love that that's kind of how the NBA is turning, that like contracts don't really matter anymore. You know, I don't want to say like, oh, loyalty doesn't matter. Like obviously that the team owes something to the player owes something to the team. But the latter part of that seems to be deteriorating pretty rapidly, where if you're someone of Zion Williamson's profile, like there's really nothing keeping you with an organization. Like if you don't have like this personal sense of loyalty, there are a lot of avenues to getting out of there, even when your contract indicates that, you know, maybe you're 2 or 3 years away from something like that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's just what happens when the money is so big, you know, and it's like, there's no one to blame for that. I mean, the NBA is one of the most popular sports in the world. You know, it's basically 50-50 between the owners and players. Like this is just what happens when the revenue of an entire league goes up and the money becomes completely out of control with, you know, the average person. We were talking about Ben Simmons earlier, you know, he doesn't show up to play games and either he gets fined or the 76ers just don't pay him. He's already made $50 million in his career. Like, what does it matter to Ben Simmons?
That is a problem when the player forfeiting game checks can just say like, I have enough money. It's not that big of a deal. Like the system is at least flawed at that point.
Yeah, like I have a $10 million house and $40 million in my bank account. Like, what does it matter to me?
I'll make it up over the next 10 years.
Yeah, Zion's already made $20 million in 2 years. Like, it doesn't, you know, mm-hmm. And I'm not saying this to, like, you know, count other people's money or whatever. This is just the reality of the situation. And, you know, obviously, like you mentioned, there are other revenue streams. You get paid to make an Instagram post. What shoe company sponsors you, all of that. So, yeah, I mean, the players are like way bigger than the organizations. It's not even close at this point anymore. So, yeah, maybe Zion will take the qualifying offer. You know, I mean, the pressure is just on the organization, partly because it seems so clear from the outset that he didn't really want to be in New Orleans in the first place. It wasn't like he was even super, I guess, neutral about it. If anything, it's been the opposite. It's like clearly he doesn't want to be there. And now he's really playing his hand to try to force the Pelicans to do everything possible. He's like, you need to pull out all the stops to woo me or else I'm just gone because I don't want to be here at all.
Well, and the problem is they're out of options, right? I mean, what could they do now that Zion is like would satisfy him? I mean, I assume he doesn't want them to trade Brandon Ingram. It's not like they have like this magical, you know, trade to acquire Giannis or Damian Lillard sitting on the table. Like the roster is what it is at this point. And I think a lot of what you said is really fair. Like the players have vastly outgrown the organizations in terms of importance, in terms of dollar value. And even when it comes to like legacies, I don't think it's, I think it's now very far from like, you know, I want to win the Lakers their 20th championship. It's like, I'm worried, like, how many championships can I win? It doesn't matter who's on my team necessarily, or what team I'm winning them for, or how recently this team has won a title, or even like where this team is located. It's like, where can I, you know, kind of better myself, I guess, for my own legacy, which, you know, I'm not going to fault anybody for doing that. If you have the option, you absolutely should. But I think it's almost an unanswerable question for the league of like, how do you quell this machine that you've kind of built? You know, like they work so hard to market these players and make these guys, you know, such a big deal in the faces of the league and the faces of their franchises, that I almost feel like it's swung too far in that direction to the point where it could end up being detrimental to the league.
Yeah, I just don't know how you fix it. You know, I mean, they're going to have to.
Right.
It's just some of this stuff is probably going to get addressed in the CBA. But I mean, how much are the players? I mean, the players probably aren't going to back down from any of this just because, you know, why would they? And
yeah,
exactly. I don't know how hard. Like, the money is so high. You know, the money has been, I think, partially everyone's just been getting richer because of the way these players are being marketed this way. Like, that's, I think, what's made the league so popular, is that, you know, it's the instant highlights on Twitter, and, you know, people don't care as much about the teams. You know, so I don't know what you do in situations like these. I think, you know, we are going to see a lot more of, I think we're just going to continue to see a ton of roster turnover, a ton of teams, you know, kind of doing like the quick on the fly rebuilds, going the route of like OKC or Houston, where it's like, you know, you have to just fully commit to the tank. Hey, we'll take on every bad contract in the world. We'll waive these guys. We'll send them somewhere else. Give us draft picks, you know? And so I don't know. You're right. Like, the Pelicans, you know, I guess you could try to trade Brandon Ingram, but I don't even know like what his value is at all at this point in the NBA. And I think, you know, I don't think you want to start trying to trade Zion at this point, because that's just, that would be almost too depressing, I think, as an organization to consider, even if long-term, you know, could end up being the better thing to do.
Well, that was going to be my next question to you, because I was talking to James Anderson about this today, and that's what he brought up, like, half jokingly, but he's like, look, like, if he keeps going this way and Zion is reportedly, you know, not talking to the organization, like, it's certainly not trending toward him happily re-signing. And even if he does, like Anthony Davis did, what's to stop him from, you know, using the immense amount of leverage that he has, that even if he signs a 5-year supermax contract, what's to stop him from demanding a trade, you know, a year into it, or 2 years, or 3 years into it? Like, signing him to that contract doesn't really mean anything. Like, it's an immediate kind of sense of relief, but I think you're right back on that cycle of, if we're not good next year, you know, even though the piece of paper says that we have this guy for 4 more years, you know, what that actually means continues to deteriorate year by year.
Right. Yeah. And then I don't even know what you do. Are you just rebuild it? You trade both him and Ingram? Like, you trade Zion to OKC for all their picks? Like, I don't.
He's the single most valuable trade asset in the league. But the problem is, if he indicates to you that he's for sure not signing, then teams are, you know, other teams are maybe a little bit less apt to give up the farm for this guy.
Right. And this is kind of like, you know, there's almost like the Ben Simmons situation, where it's like, he has not, it's not exactly like that, but Ben Simmons is like, well, I want to go to these teams. Now, he doesn't have the control that Zion has, but, you know, Zion could be like, oh, I'm not taking the qualifying offer. You know, you trade me to Oklahoma City and I don't want to live there. Like, I'm not going to,
right.
You know, I'm not going to sign an extension there. So yeah, I mean, he is probably, I don't know if he's the number one trade asset. I mean, you know, that might still be like Doncic or something, but given his contract, like the fact that he's still on the rookie contract, he has the most leverage. He might have the most leverage of any player in the NBA, aside from, I don't even know, LeBron. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, LeBron still probably has the most like control, I guess. But I think at this age, maybe he's not the number one trade asset. I mean, I think Giannis and Luka are probably ahead of him, but he's right there. I mean, he's in the conversation, and he's younger than those guys, so it's you know, he's on that number one tier certainly. But yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's, even if they wanted to trade him to OKC for SGA and 7 first round picks, like even if Zion had signed the contract already, you know, what's like, he has kind of this like unspoken leverage of like, well, you know, I'm not under contract. I don't always have to try my hardest. Or like, what if I don't show up in shape? Like, there's other like subtle ways that he can exert leverage outside of the contract.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, you still have to be concerned as an organization, like his injury history. There's, I mean, we've barely seen 80 games out of Zion. Like he is, this is one of the most kind of bizarre beginnings to a career of any, you know, like essentially number one, you know, top profile pick that I can remember, you know, starting with like the, you know, just his fame overall. And then his injuries and the bubble and the short off seasons. And then he basically was healthy and was averaging like 30 a game. And, it's out of control.
If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WynnBET, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WynnBET is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WynnBET brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more are at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WynnBET's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WynnBET is currently available in 6 U.S. states, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding nationwide. At WynnBET, the possibilities are limitless. WynnBET is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. All you have to do is download the WynnBET app right now. That's WynnBET, WYNNBET. WynnBET, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast.
All right, so all this leads me to ask you, if it comes to fantasy drafts, these guys are right next to each other in our rankings for 8-cat roto leagues. Would you rather draft Domantas Sabonis or Zion Williamson?
I was actually going to ask you a Domantas Sabonis one. Do you want me to throw my third name in there?
Absolutely.
Jimmy Butler.
I think I would go Sabonis, Zion, Butler in that order.
Sabonis, Zion, Butler. Yeah. So I'm in a NFBKC draft, the Raz Jam, which I think is that football or baseball before? I can never, they do a ton of drafts. Anyway, I drafted Jimmy Butler, and then I think after my pick was Sabonis. I think I would take Sabonis first. I mean, they changed coaches and all that, but I think Sabonis's role is just so cemented on that team. You know, he's such a good passer. He's improving as a three-point shooter. You don't have to take him off the court because he can shoot free throws well, all that. So I guess Butler and Zion for number two, that's tough for me because you both kind of worry about their injury concerns, right? Butler's older. He's got the Thibodeau miles on his knees, but he's got way more steals upside. You know, he was like the number 7 player in fantasy last year per game, partially because of those steals. I think I would take Butler and then Zion. So I'd go Sabonis, Butler, Zion.
Okay.
I still have some concerns about, again, Zion's injuries or his knees. And I'm a little worried about like still his free throw percentage. I know his free throw percentage improved, but to be above Jimmy Butler, you know, Jimmy Butler is probably trending down. Obviously Zion's up, but it's borderline. I think the main argument for Zion over all these guys would be the Pelicans are desperately reliant on him to be great more than the Heat are reliant on Butler. And the Pacers are reliant on Sabonis because those other guys just have more help.
Yeah. And part of the reason Sabonis was like on another world at the end of the year was the Pacers were completely decimated by injuries and including him. I mean, he was kind of in and out, but he was still like when healthy, he was putting up insane numbers. But you know, Miles Turner is perpetually banged up. Brogdon's perpetually banged up. LaVert is always been in and out. So it's very possible that scenario repeats itself. I mean, I did think it was interesting. You know, I mentioned talking with James about the Zion situation. He said he's just going to try to not touch Zion, you know, unless you can really get a great value on him, which is pretty unlikely. And I don't know if the implication is, you know, is there a possibility that this turns into Anthony Davis, you know, his last year with the Pelicans where, you know, it just kind of gets to the point where if the Pelicans get off to a slow start and the relationship between Zion and, you know, the organization and David Griffin continues to sour, like, is there a scenario where, you know, he's sitting out games, or there's a phantom injury or something like that?
Yeah, the sort of like Zion market is really kind of all over the place. So like if you're in a redraft league, you have to at least I think having James concerns are fair. So you probably feel better about having him in a keeper league. You feel better about like having his rookie card in your hand. You feel better. Like you feel bad about, you know, you're not gonna feel good about the Pelicans if you're betting they're over under. You're gonna be kind of scared off by that whole situation. So yeah, I mean, Zion long term is obviously good, but this season there are some concerns, you know, I think that are valid there.
Would you rather draft Rashawn Holmes or Jusuf Nurkic?
That is a tough question. I think I would rather have Nurkic. I know he's been banged up and he had a bad year last season. I think part of that was him being banged up, but he has so much more upside as a player. He's proven to be an above average passer for a big man, can average almost 4 assists a game. He's proven to be a good defender. His offensive game is a little more varied than Holmes, although Holmes is so dominant around the basket. His field goal percentage is high, but you know, the Trailblazers just are not a deep team. I think he is extremely crucial to their game plan. There were points 2 years ago where he seemed like he was more crucial to the game plan than CJ McCollum. So I would just go Nurkic. I mean, I might be higher than Nurkic on a lot of other people, but he clearly, you know, this is a strong bounce back opportunity for him, but I can see why you feel a lot safer picking Holmes.
Yeah, I think you said it perfectly. I mean, it's Holmes, you know, free throw percentage is a big asset with him having a big man who basically shoots 80%, although not on like the highest volume, you know, 2.5 to 3 attempts per game. That's big. The blocks are big. But no, you're right. Nurkic has the upside. And I do feel like he's due for at least one healthy season here. Like the last two have just been complete disasters. And even when he came back last year, I mean, he was playing like 20 minutes a game for a lot of that time. And, you know, they don't have the same depth this year behind him. Like if and when he's healthy, I think he's closer to 28 to 32 minutes a game. And even though I feel like some of his stats can be a little bit empty calories, I mean, we have him down projections wise for like, you know what, 14.5 points, 9 boards, 3.5 assists, 1.2 steals, 1.4 blocks. And he's not a terrible free throw shooter. He's not great, but, you know, 71% for a big man is totally fine. I'm with you on Nurkic.
Yeah, he's shown some, like in the bubble, he was playing out of his mind at points. Yeah. Like he clearly still has it. So it must be a health issue. Would you rather draft Donovan Mitchell or Julius Randle?
Oof. I have a Randle one as well. Okay. But we'll save that one. It's a little bit different. Man, that's tough. I mean, part of me is expecting some regression for Randle, right? It's just a matter of how much. And so much of what made him valuable last year was he didn't miss any time and pretty much everybody else missed time. So he jumps a ton if you look at total value versus per game value. But he's also gotten better in like each of the last 4 years progressively. It's just hard for me to think that he has another level to go up beyond this. Like if he can just replicate last year, you know, if you take him like 30th overall or 25th or whatever, and he puts up the exact same numbers as last year and plays, like 80 games, you're thrilled with that, right? Like you're not expecting him to get any better.
Yeah, for sure.
Man, that's tough. That's so tough. I do think I would take Randle. And again, this is a classic, like who did you take with your first or second pick? And that maybe dictates, you know, a positional need, but in a vacuum, I still think I would lean Randle.
I would too. I think this is a situation that a lot of people will find themselves in the early third round of drafts or late second. Cause I think I'm with you, you know, Randle, they have so much more help this season. Maybe, you know, there's some improvement from Barrett potentially. You have Walker coming in, you have Fournier coming in. Those guys can handle the ball. I still think they're going to run a lot of stuff through Randle. I mean, I knocked down his projections the other day, like last week, and he still came out, you know, we have him projected 26th. And we have Donovan Mitchell projected 35th. Yes. And Mitchell too. I mean, talk about someone who, you know, has stepped up in the playoffs. Like, Mitchell's playoff performances have been out, like, insane. Yeah. Now, whether that translates to the regular season, I don't know, because the Jazz are just a regular season machine at this point. They have enough depth. They have enough, you know, they don't need Donovan Mitchell to score 30 every night. So I think I would, I did go Randle. I, you know, when I was drafting in this draft, cause I think even if he does, I think his downside is pretty comparable to Mitchell's normal season and maybe upside. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think with Randle, like there's a chance that everybody around him stays a little healthier and they have a ton of contributors. Like they're really deep.
Right.
And I think there's a chance that they just share the load a little bit more. You know, it's not even regression necessarily. It's just like, we're not ending every possession with Julius Randle fadeaway 18 footer that was going down at an alarming rate last year. So I think there's a chance he takes a slight step back, but yeah, with Mitchell, it's just how much of a step forward can he take? Because he's essentially had the same season 3 years in a row now. And last year he upped the assists a little more. I mean, if he could be like six and a half assists, or, you know, closer to a steal and a half per game, or closer to 47% from the field, you know, then we're talking, you know, you would consider Mitchell over Randle, but I still think Randle is the safer choice at this point.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Would you rather draft D'Angelo Russell or Buddy Hield?
Yeah, exactly. Wow.
Hopefully this is not a decision you have to make.
I think I would rather go D'Angelo Russell. Don't feel great about it, obviously. But this might be draft dependent. You need threes. You draft Hield. But I don't know, man. D'Angelo Russell, he is... The Wolves don't need him to be great as much as they did like last season, because, you know, theoretically Anthony Edwards takes a step forward and Malik Beasley is available and they have, you know, they have some other ways to generate offense. But you know, they're still going to put the ball in Russell's hands and basically have him be a playmaker, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's going to be his role on any team that he's on. If he's playing 35 minutes a game, even if he's playing 28 minutes a game, you know, if they trade him somewhere and he's like a super sixth man, like, he's going to be controlling the offense when he has the ball. So I would just rather take the higher usage at that okay. point. But obviously, I understand if you're in a head-to-head league, you maybe rather draft, you know, Hield if you're going for like a three-pointers right. build. But yeah, I would take Russell.
I think I'd go Hield. I think he's a little safer. I love the high volume threes, and Russell's a high volume three guy himself. But still, Hield is like one more 3-pointer per game. He's in that elite territory, you know, with Curry and Lillard. Both these guys are potential, you know, trade targets, guys who've been in the rumor mill for a long time on that front. So, you know, that also has to be considered. But I just think health wise, I mean, Russell's becoming a pretty big liability in that yeah. regard. And Hield has really not been. Even with the trade stuff hanging over both of them, I think I would favor the guy who I can just bank on, you know, if I haven't drafted Curry or Lillard, like being able to get a guy who can like at least is in their neighborhood in terms of made threes, being able to shore up that category with like the 65th pick is a pretty nice luxury.
Yeah, these are like 6th round guys. I'm going to, you know, like I've said it before on this podcast, but I'm going to probably just try to be more aggressive than I have been in past years of just like, once you're past pick 5, I'm not really going to think about injuries anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like if I'm not going to think about like if Porzingis is on the board with the 60th pick, I'll just take him. I don't care.
Sure.
Is the upside high enough? You can always stream guys. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this one for you. Would you rather draft Chris Paul or Chris Wood?
Okay, was that Christian just to get two Chris's?
Yeah, okay. Sort of, but they're close to each other in the yeah. rankings, and in my draft, they were drafted back to back. So,
well, as a hint, who went first in the draft?
I honestly don't remember, but okay. I'll tell you that I drafted Christian Wood. Okay. Two.
And I think you made the right call. I would also go Christian Wood. I think, I mean, unfortunate injury luck last year. I also don't think the Rockets were in any position to, you know, get him on the floor more than he had to be. I think they were fine with him being injured, you know, on and off, and just, you know, losing as many games as possible. Not that that mandate necessarily changes this year, but I think there's a little bit, you know, now that you have Jalen Green in the fold, I think there's a little bit less of an obligation to lose games. I think there's a chance that he plays quite a few more games than last year. And I still can't shake the notion that Chris Paul is just this like Iron Man who misses one game a year now. You know, like that's not how this is supposed to work. Like he was like the most broken down player in the league 3 years ago. And now he's only eating plants. And as he's, you know, he's 36 years old and now he just doesn't miss time. Like I don't know. I think at some point that's going to come back around. And I think if nothing else, you know, Phoenix is now a team that is a proven finals team. You know, whether they deserve to get there or not, we can argue about that all day, but they were in the finals last year and they are now expecting to get back to the finals. And that means that you're probably not playing Chris Paul 33 minutes a night. I mean, he was at 31.4 minutes per game last year. I think that could dip, you know, he could dip closer to like 30 minutes a game this year. I think, you know, you could run Booker at point, you brought back campaign. Yep. They have options. So there's really no need to push him in the regular season. And I think as last season demonstrated, like it's all about getting to the finals. Like I don't think they're going to make this massive push to get the one or the two seed like they did last year. They might be good enough to just be in that realm anyway. But I think this is more of a kind of careful load playoff management season for Chris Paul, where even if he doesn't get hurt, I don't see him. You know, I think I see him missing a little bit more time just for rest and maintenance purposes this coming year.
Yeah, I always thought the story's funny. Like he went vegan and he's really, you know, he's basically never gotten hurt since. And just my question was like, was he not eating vegetables at all before? Like, was this just a situation? Yeah. Was this a situation where he was basically just like eating pizza every day and like breakfast sandwiches? Like, you know,
it's hard to say. Cause like Dwight Howard has subsisted on only candy for 15 years and has really not been that injured. He had the back issues, but he's been pretty healthy.
He's eating like Skittles and doing hot yoga. And that's been his routine for the past 2 years. Exactly. I would go with Christian Wood too.
Okay. Well, let's go back to Randall. We don't have to spend too much time on this because we've already discussed the Randall side of it. But Julius Randall or Nikola Vucevic?
Randall. I think this. I actually, now that you mention this, I do think that Vucevic was drafted. He was drafted pretty early in my league. He might have went closer to Jimmy Butler and Domantas Sabonis in my league. But yeah, I'm just worried about Vucevic's usage a little bit, kind of with everything that Chicago has done. Like they're still really shallow. I think, you know, they have like the four main offensive pieces in DeRozan, Ball, LaVine, Vucevic. Two of those guys should be on the court at all times. But, you know, I mean, he's someone too that hasn't been like the pinnacle of health either. And he's on the other side of 30. He's on the best team of his career, right? Like, this is the best team Vucevic has ever been on. So, by far. So, in theory, you know, I could see him falling down to like 17 points a game, 16 points a game. Like, I'm sure he'll still be a great rebounder. There will be opportunities for him to pass, although the ball won't be in his hands as much. But I think we could see a pretty significant dip for Vucevic.
So you think he's the Chris Bosh of this Chicago Bulls? I don't want to say super team, but team.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's tough to say because, you know, Lonzo is such a low usage player, at least from a shot attempts perspective. Yeah. But yeah, I think he takes the biggest hit compared to his previous role. I mean, actually, it is kind of similar because Bosh was just like running the Raptors.
Right.
Like Vooch was running the Magic.
Yeah, it actually is extremely similar. But, you know, Zach LaVine, LeBron James, DeMar DeRozan, Dwayne Wade. I don't know. All right. What's your next one?
Would you rather draft Anthony Edwards or CJ McCollum?
Yeah, this might be the biggest like spread in rankings or projections that we've had. I want to know what happens with the Simmons trade first. If he goes to Minnesota and they clear out, you know, let's say they clear out Beasley and Russell, even with Simmons being there, I think that ultimately is a win for Anthony Edwards. But I think I'd still go McCollum. I mean, there's the repeated kind of foot and ankle issues that he's had, you know, have really, really impacted him these last few years. But I also think back to like how dominant he was for those first 15 or 20 games before he got hurt last year. And he still looked pretty good afterward. Wasn't quite on that kind of run. But I mean, before he went down, he was, I'm trying to bring up the stats now. It was only 12 games, but he was at 28 points, 4.5 rebounds, 5.5 assists, 1.5 steals, 47% from the field, 43% from three, hitting 4.9 three-pointers per game.
Yeah, he completely like he completely changed the way he played. Just became a super high volume 3-point shooter.
Yep.
Eliminated some of his, you know, the mid-range stuff. Yeah, I went McCollum here. This happened in my draft. I think Anthony Edwards is being overdrafted. I think he went pretty similar to his ADP on NFBKC, which is around like 40 or 50 or something like that.
That's high then.
Yeah, this is a situation where I think McCollum's downside is Anthony Edwards' upside. Yep. And you know, in those cases, I would rather take McCollum, who's been like a top 50 player for like his entire career almost. And I think Edwards, you know, given what Edwards showed in the second half of the season, I think he has he was incredible. I think he's a really strong career in the NBA ahead of him, but not so much so that I would take him ahead of CJ McCollum in a redraft league.
I don't know if it's because there were some question marks about him coming into the league or if because he plays for the Timberwolves, but there's still like this prove it aspect with Anthony Edwards, right? Like, you know, Malik Beasley was suspended when Edwards went on that run. Russell was hurt. He's coming off the bench toward the end of the year. Like, I don't know. Like, I still want to see him do it again. Like, I think he certainly can, and I would bet that he probably will. But as of right now, the way that the Timberwolves roster is currently constructed, it's just hard for me to see him taking a massive leap just because they have too many mouths to feed. You know, like he's not gonna get like 25 shots a game when you have Beasley, Russell, and Towns on that team. And again, that could change. Those guys could get hurt. There could be a trade. But as currently constructed, I feel like he's still like a year away or maybe 2 years away from making that massive leap just by virtue of where he stands in the pecking order.
Yeah, I think best case scenario for him, they play him a ton with the other bench guys. You know, like they pull, he's the first starter they pull, and then they bring him back in when the rest of the starters are out. He just kind of gets to go crazy in his, you know, 15 minutes that he's out there completely alone.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, could easily average 20 a game.
Okay, this is the last one I have. It's not the most exciting, but I think it's strangely become an actual debate that I think people are going to have around pick 90 to 100.
Okay.
Would you rather draft Nerlens Noel or Mitchell Robinson?
Yeah, this is tough. I think I would just still take Mitchell Robinson just because of, you know, I think the Knicks would still very much love for Mitchell Robinson to reach that potential that he clearly showed in previous seasons. Now, I think he was very good. I think Tom Thibodeau did a good job of, you know, kind of reining him in terms of don't sell out for blocks. You know, if you have no shot of blocking it, just box out, go for the rebound, play smarter. He's still an insane athlete. I think maybe he gets his blocks back up a little bit. I think Noel definitely has higher defensive upside, but you could draft these guys back to back, honestly, with like, you know, picks 98 or 100 and just kind of roll with that, like as your center crew, I think is actually a realistic way to do it. But I'd still go with the guy with more upside, who I think is Mitchell Robinson at this point.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, neither of these guys are extremely healthy. Noel, I feel like, perpetually has a sprained ankle. We wrote a note on him before every single game last year that he was questionable. And Robinson obviously has missed a ton of time as well. And he only played 31 games last season. With Robinson, though, it's like the big appeal his rookie year was the block rate, right? I mean, it was like borderline historic, like Manute Bol level block rate. And not only has his blocks per game dropped pretty dramatically by about a half block per game each of the last 2 years, but his block percentage was 10% as a rookie, which is unbelievable. Anytime you're in double digits, that's crazy. It was 8% as a sophomore and then just 5% last year. So, you know, maybe he's becoming a more disciplined defender and like a better overall player. But for fantasy purposes, the attraction was, look, if this guy's playing 30 to 35 minutes a game, he might be averaging like 4 blocks a game. Like that was the projection. You know, that was the projection based on his rookie year. And he just hasn't quite been that same guy as a shot blocker. And obviously the minutes haven't increased quite the same way that we thought they would either. So I don't know where I would go on this. Like it's a really tough choice because especially that late in the draft, you don't necessarily want to be taking the safer pick. Like if you can get a guy with Mitchell Robinson level upside with a 90th pick, that's pretty appealing. But at the same time, Nerlens Noel had a block rate that was 3.7 percentage points higher than Robinson's last year. So it's like, I honestly don't even know who's the better player at this point.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah. I think Noel is the better per minute player at this point. So maybe take Noel. I think Mitchell Robinson will start. It is a tough choice. Like I, you know, you could probably convince me either one. Not married to the idea of Mitchell Robinson. I mean, the new Mitchell Robinson is Robert Williams, right? Yes. Like that's unquestionable.
Yes.
Yeah. He's someone.
Okay. You have any left in the holster?
No.
Okay. Well, I want to finish out on one more. Let me cook one up here on the fly. Oh man. Well, first of all, where are you at on Kawhi Leonard? He's in the top 90 in our rankings, which I don't love. We have him at 25 games projected. We might have to knock that down a little bit. But like at what point in the draft are you comfortable knowing what we know right now? And hopefully we'll know more once camp opens and we get some comments from the Clippers. But it is Kawhi. So that's far from a given. At what point would you be comfortable, you know, assuming you have an IR spot or two available, at what point in the draft are you comfortable taking Kawhi?
I don't think I would take him in a standard league. You know, maybe like pick, if I'm in a 14 teamer or a 16 teamer, maybe my last pick. I mean, because part of the issue is, you know, like we have him projected for 25 games, but that doesn't take into account that a lot of fantasy leagues end with a month
right
to go on the regular season. So he may actually come back like 2 games before your fantasy season ends. So to me, he's practically undraftable. However, if you're like in a 14 team league with 2 IR spots, yeah, just like take him with your last pick. If you want to, like, I wouldn't do it, I don't think. But, cause I would just rather take almost anybody else with like a modicum of upside. Like I would rather take Pokuševski. I'd rather take like Talen Horton Tucker or, you know, like DeAndre Hunter or something.
I'm worried about you and Pokuševski. I feel like by the time the regular season rolls around, like we're going to be doing a draft on like the eve of the regular season. You're going to take him like 30th overall.
So he's the perfect example of, he's like the new barometer of like last, you know, like flyer guy at pick like 110. Like he is kind of the barometer at this point. There have been other years, there have been, you know, guys who have filled that role, but he's the name right now for sure.
He is. All right, man, this is fun. Well, we'll do at least another one of these between now and the start of the regular season. Maybe a couple, maybe get Shannon or James involved and kind of throw some of these at the wall and see where everybody stands. I think this is a really good way to, like you said, evaluate some situations that are already presenting themselves in real life. So it's fun that we're starting to get draft season underway. I know DraftKings launched their best ball contest this week. You're already involved in the Raz Jam. We're talking NFBKC with Shannon earlier today. It's exciting stuff, dude. We're, what, 5 days away from training camps opening?
Yeah, I think the first preseason game is October 3rd, right? Nets Lakers.
I don't know who's playing, but I do know it's October 3rd.
I think it's Nets Lakers.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's going to be a star-studded affair. I'm sure everybody will be playing full complements of minutes.
You know, I heard someone say that, and I'm just thinking, I'm like, there's no way everyone plays in this game, right? There's no way we actually get the matchup.
For the preseason opener, I would rather watch like Thunder Magic than Lakers Nets, right? Like, why even do that? Like, save that one for opening night.
Yeah, I think that's just to remind people that the people who are diehard football fans.
Yeah.
It's like, by the way, NBA exists and these are the teams. Like,
I think it's also tricking people who maybe don't follow the preseason into thinking that those guys are going to play to boost the ratings.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll chat again soon. As always, check out our content, rotowire.com/basketball. We're putting new stuff up every single day, essentially, between now and the start of the regular season.